This is MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennick, and this is a special free edition of our Torch audio update. It's day 11 of our UFC 102 maker coverage, but this is our UFC 102 preview. Today I am joined by Torch columnist Matt Pelkey. Normally we have more of our guys on tap for these audios, but due to family and illness issues, it's down to just us two, but we've still plenty in store for you here in this preview edition. So, Matt, just first off, we are just days away from UFC 102. What are you most looking forward to outside of course, Demian Maia and Nate Marquardt, which we've talked about at length?
Other than that, obviously the main event is a big deal. Maybe not as big a deal as it could have been in years past, but it's still a fight that, you know, we would certainly want to see before both guys retired, and we're getting that. And who knows? It could end up being an important fight depending on who wins and how they win as far as future title implications, but I almost feel like the way they're setting up the heavyweight division right now, that Randy Couture, even if he wins, isn't really being set up for another shot at Brock Lesnar. Maybe he wants to go back down to 205 and have a couple more super fights to round out his career. But either way, he's got to get past Big Nog first. So I think that's, of everything else on this card, you know, it's nice to say that a main event is what you're most looking forward to.
Well, let's start up with our first bout on the pay-per-view card. We've got Brandon Vera taking on Krzysztof Soszynski. This is a fight that Vera needs to look good in. I mean, he went on a four-fight stretch where he didn't look good in four straight fights, dropping two in the heavyweight division, making the drop to light heavyweight, not looking good against Rhys Andy in a victory, not looking good against Keith Jardine in a loss. And then he came back against Mike Pat in March and turned that around, finally started to look like he was ready to go at 205, and this is his fourth fight now in the light heavyweight division, taking on Krzysztof Soszynski. This is a tough fight to call because Soszynski's been increasingly impressive in his bouts in 2009 since fighting on the Ultimate Fighter last year, and Vera has a definite advantage in just about every category, but hasn't shown the whole game in the last couple of years. So do you think Brandon Vera is back for this fight? Is he coming out to take this, or is Krzysztof going to give us an upset?
I'm encouraged by the fact that Brandon Vera seems to be back to his "I'm going to hold two belts simultaneously" talk. Obviously, it's kind of silly when you analyze it, but it's nice to know that the confidence he had when he first came to the UFC seems to be back. You know, he's been up and down recently, obviously, but last time we saw him against Mike Pat, he no longer looked like a skinny, soft, you know, fighter cutting down weight till he's just skin and bones to get to 205. He'd actually kind of looked like transformed his body. He was a lot more muscular, a lot more lean. Everything he did looked a lot more crisp. You know, ignore the competition. Mike Pat obviously isn't the greatest fighter in the world. Just look at how Brandon Vera looked in that fight, and he looked absolutely fantastic. So if he's training the way he should be training and his mind is in the right place, he's still talented enough to do, you know, to accomplish the goals he sets out for himself. Krzysztof has carved out a nice niche for himself as a gatekeeper in the light heavyweight division. He's looked very good in his last few fights since the Ultimate Fighter. But I think this is just going to be too big of a step up in competition for him. We forget that Brandon Vera was just plowing through his first four or five opponents in the UFC, and that was at heavyweight. This is going to be a light heavyweight. He's going to be a bigger, stronger fighter here and still very quick, and I think that's going to be the difference in this fight. I've got Vera overwhelming Krzysztof somewhere in the second round and choking him out.
I've got Vera winning this fight too, but I'm giving Krzysztof enough credit to survive to the end in this one. I mean, he's shown some savvy over the last three fights in the UFC, and he seems to be clicking on different cylinders than he had coming into the Ultimate Fighter, where he had definitely had an up and down career up until that point, just very inconsistent. He looks to be getting that consistency into his game, and I'm going to give him credit enough to stay in there with Vera through all three rounds, but he's going to come up short in this one. Vera's going to look good. So both in agreement on that one. Next up, we'll move on to Chris Leben taking on Jake Rochalt. For me, this comes down to if Rochalt can get Leben to the ground and keep him there for three rounds, and I don't think he can do it. Chris Leben returning after his steroid suspension, Jake Rochalt, a three-time national champion with the most decorated college wrestler that the UFC has ever had, but it just hasn't translated to enough success in the sport at this point compared to some others that have come in, say, like Johnny Hendricks, who has better stand-up than Rochalt has shown so far in his career. I just don't think he's going to be able to avoid the big bomb from Chris Leben for three rounds, and Leben's enough of a veteran where he's seen just about everything that Rochalt would be able to throw at him from a wrestling standpoint. And this one's Leben's bout to lose. I have him taking out Rochalt with a second round TKO.
Yeah, we're in agreement on this one. Leben is, you know, he's got heavy hands. He can take a punch, which he probably isn't even going to have to do in this fight. Rochalt's going to put him on his back a little, but he's not going to inflict much damage. Eventually, Leben's either going to get up or get stood up, and it's just a matter of time before he lands a big punch. Jake Rochalt just doesn't seem to be evolving as a mixed martial artist as quickly as maybe some people had hoped. He's still basically just a wrestler. He's almost like Bobby Lashley, but whereas Bobby Lashley has made a conscious decision to gradually increase his competition and his exposure, Jake Rochalt's been kind of thrown to the wolves here pretty early. I mean, look at his first two UFC fights against Dan Miller and then Chris Leben. That's two pretty tough tests for a guy that's supposed to be this big up-and-coming prospect. So maybe they think that he's just, you know, if he beats Chris Leben, great. Maybe they can get behind him, but if not, you know, time to maybe cut their losses, let him go, get some experience somewhere else. But as far as the result, I'm with you. Leben by TKO, I think it's going to happen in the first round, though, and I think it'll be a nice return for the Crippler.
We'll move on to Demian Maia against Nate Marquardt here. And I mean, we've talked about this fight for a while here now. It's one of the fights that we've been looking forward to for a long time. I mean, even before they announced the bout, it was one that we were suggesting they should put together because the two of them make for a great contrast of styles to eliminate one of them from contention at the moment because just where the middleweight division is right now, you've got to determine a challenger for Anderson Silva with having these guys fight each other to get themselves there. And here, I mean, Maia has rolled through the competition, five straight submission victories and five UFC bouts, four of them coming with a submission of the night. So, I mean, he's already racked up an extra $200,000 just in bonuses in his five UFC fights. And you've got Nate Marquardt, who is a completely renewed fighter after losing to Anderson Silva 2 years ago. And you throw out the lightest loss because it's a fight that he probably should have won, had a questionable point deducted, and another one that was deducted earlier in the fight that cost him to lose. Still a split decision, even with 2 points off. And you look at the fact that he choked out Jeremy Horn and destroyed Martin Campman and finished off Wilson Gouveia in impressive fashion. It's going to be a creative striking game against the ground wizardry of Demian Maia, and it's a great fight. It should be an exciting fight. And the story in this one is, can Maia get Marquardt to the ground like he's gotten everyone else to the ground? And once there, can Marquardt survive the submission attempts and avoid getting submitted at the hands of Demian Maia? How are you standing on this 4 days out?
Well, I think it's safe to say if Demian Maia is going to win this fight, it's going to be by submission. It's unlikely he's going to outstrike Nate Marquardt and you know, spend more time in top position in this fight to earn decision. So basically his only route to go is by submission. If he does that, if he submits Nate Marquardt, he has nothing left to prove, and he should get the next crack at Anderson Silva. That would put him at 6-0 in the UFC with all six wins coming by submission. I mean, he's done it against pretty good competition, too, especially with if this would be a win over Nate Marquardt. That's one of the two or three best middleweights in the world. just say he's ready to go. That being said, I just don't see how it's going to happen. He struggled with another solid ground fighter in Jason McDonald, but Jason McDonald is nowhere near the level of a Nate Marquardt. Nate Marquardt is very good on the ground. He's become a very good striker. He's a very good wrestler. I mean, he has the experience edge. It all seems to be pointing towards Nate Marquardt here. There might be a couple of moments during the fight where it feels like he's in danger, where he, you know, maybe narrowly escapes the submission. But I think by and large, for three rounds, it's going to be Nate Marquardt proving that he's on a different level as a mixed martial artist than Damian Maia is at this point. I think it's going to be a three-round battering, kind of in the same vein of the Talis Latest fight, but hopefully without the illegal blows and points taken away. And I will have Marquardt taking this one by decision.
I've got Marquardt finishing this one in the third round. I agree. I think they're going to be very back and forth in this fight, but I don't think Maia is going to be able to withstand just the onslaught that Marquardt will ultimately be throwing out at him through three rounds in this fight. So we're both in agreement here through the first three fights. We're going to need to get some contention here as we're challenging for this prediction contest belt. But moving on to one of the toughest fights to really pick to make a decision on, and that's because Keith Jardine is in it. You've got Keith Jardine against Thiago Silva, and at first blush, this is one of those fights that for Jardine looks like the two knockouts that he suffered in the UFC. I mean, you've got Thiago Silva, who is a guy that has taken some guys out in pretty brutal fashion before he got destroyed by Lyoto Machida in the last second of the first round at UFC 94. But he's got the ability to knock guys out, and Jardine, as we've seen, has the ability to stay in there with the very best of the best, and then he can get knocked out by Houston Alexander and Wanderlei Silva in the one win Wanderlei's had since returning to the UFC. So this is one of those fights where it's either going to be Thiago Silva knocking Keith Jardine out in the first round or Keith Jardine likely taking a decision. I'm going to go with the safe bet on this with the slight favorite right now and taking Keith Jardine to take the decision and to get back on the winning track.
Yeah, I think you're right that those are basically the only two possible outcomes. We're going to get a little contention here. I'm going to take the other side of the coin and say that Silva TKOs him in the first round. I just feel like you said, this is kind of a bad matchup for Keith Jardine as far as what we've learned about him not really liking to fight with guys in close. He definitely has a weakness in the clinch. And the fact that, you know, what makes him successful against fighters who will stand back and let him punch in space is that he has those long, lanky arms. He needs that space to get those going, and he can use that to keep the other fighter off of him. Thiago Silva is more of a get-in-close brawl type. If he can work the clinch, I think that's going to be the key here. He's going to test Keith Jardine's chin, and any time that's happened, he seems to have failed the test. So I see that happening again. I'm just going by past precedent here as far as how the matchup goes, but I've got Thiago Silva taking this one in the first round by TKO.
Yeah, and like I said, that's the two ways that I see this fight going down, and either one is a good pick because either one has a high likelihood of happening. I mean, the lines on this card are really, really close for almost every fight. I mean, there's no clear-cut underdogs really anywhere on this fight. There's some that are a little more heavily favored. The only one that's a high favorite in this card is Gabe Gonzaga, and we'll get to that fight in just a minute. But everything else is really close on this card. There's a lot of parity and a lot of even matchups here. But we'll move on to the main event now. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira taking on Randy Couture. And you talked about really Couture not really being set up for a heavyweight title fight should he win this. And the thing is, he's walking around right now. He launched his video blog today for the event, and he's walking around at 221. He can make 205. Randy Couture can make 205 if he wants to go and fight some more fights there, back down at light heavyweight before calling it a career again. So this is a fight that it's just one of those fights that hasn't happened that a lot of people want to see happen, and both of these guys want to show that they've still got stuff left in the tank. Whether that's the case or not, we won't find out until Saturday night. Nogueira's going to have a size advantage in here, but Couture is, I think, going to have a stand-up advantage. I think his stand-up is, if it can be underrated, it is. It's hard to say his stand-up is underrated, but it's certainly not as well appreciated as maybe it should be. And Nogueira may have troubles with Couture in the clinch and may have troubles with him on the ground as well, as I think Couture can effectively utilize a ground and pound strategy on the way to taking a decision or pounding him out. In this one, I think Couture is going to take the decision. I think he's going to likely move down to 205 after this, but I think Couture looks good here, and I think he wins this fight.
Yeah, I agree with you. This matchup favors Couture in pretty much every area. Obviously, if Couture was on his back and Nogueira was on top, that would be favor Nogueira, but that just doesn't seem likely to happen in this fight. Couture is likely going to get in close, uses dirty boxing, uses clinch like he often does, get a takedown, work some ground and pound from side control or half guard. You know, typical Randy Couture, I just don't see Nogueira being able to stop him from what he wants to do. But this is kind of a show-me fight for both guys. Nogueira's only 33 years old, but, he looks like he's 45 years old. He looks like he's in worse shape and older than Randy Couture. That's from taking years and years of abuse. He's one of the toughest guys in the history of the sport. He just got stopped the very first time in his last fight. But as we've seen with guys before, sometimes it's a precipitous drop. It kind of happens real quick out of nowhere. So maybe that's what's happening to him. Maybe it was the staph infection. We don't really know. Everybody has injuries and things like that coming into fights. You can never really tell how much that affects a certain fighter during a fight. I think he'll look better here than he did in the Frank Mir fight. He couldn't really look too much worse, but I just see Randy Couture as having the better matchup style-wise, kind of a slower version of the Marquardt Maia fight. Couture should control things on the feet. When he wants to get a takedown, he'll be able to get it. And he should be plenty good enough to hold off Nogueira's submissions from the bottom. And I think that's just going to be a likely three-round, rinse and repeat cycle with Couture just grinding this one out for three rounds and taking a decision.
All right, well, looks like the Jardine-Silva fight is our one point of difference here on the main card, but let's head down to our undercard with some quick thoughts. First up, we'll work top-down on the undercard here. We got Ed Herman taking on Aaron Simpson. Simpson's coming in with a 5-0 record, all by TKO or knockout. Ed Herman's never been knocked out in his career. It's not likely to happen in this one. I'm looking for Herman to utilize his wrestling over Simpson and just basically use his size and experience advantage to outpoint Simpson and avoid the knockout and take the unanimous decision in this one.
Well, there's another point of contention for us. I got Simpson taking this one by decision. You're right, he's not going to stop at Herman. Ed Herman's a tough guy, a good scrappy 185-pounder. Simpson's not really far enough along his career to have the finishing skills for a guy like Ed Herman, but he really just needs to turn this into a wrestling match. He should have a slight wrestling advantage in this one, so if he can constantly put Ed Herman on his back, I think that'll be the key to him taking a decision in this one.
Next up, we've got Gabriel Gonzaga taking on one of the three debuting heavyweight fighters on this undercard in Chris Teixeira. This is going to be my pick for the upset of the night, with Teixeira taking a TKO in the second round. I wouldn't be surprised if Gonzaga knocks him out or submits him. That's what he's supposed to do in this fight. But I think Teixeira's wrestling ability, along with his training with the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy and Brock Lesnar and all of that is gonna benefit him in this debut. And I think he's gonna be able to rock Gonzaga a couple of times and finish him off in the second round. So I've got Teixeira taking the upset with a TKO in the second.
I like the upset pick, but I'm kind of going with what you did with Jardine here. Obviously, Gabriel Gonzaga is another one of the more mercurial fighters in the UFC. But I've got to go with the safe route here. Gonzaga has heavy hands. He's not like a great technical striker, but if he lands a big shot, he's going to put you out. His ground game is one of the best in the heavyweight division. And I think the debut jitters are going to get to share a little bit here. I've got Gonzaga taking this one by first-round TKO, just physically overwhelming Teixeira before he has time to break down Gonzaga in the later rounds.
Now, one of the fighters that may make the biggest splash on this undercard is Mike Russo taking on Justin McCulley. Russo is on a 7-fight win streak. His one loss came to Sergei Karatanov in Pride. He's 11-1 overall with one no contest. He stopped all but one of his fights by submission or KO. He's a very talented submission fighter as a heavyweight, and McCulley's basically he's been a lay-in prey artist for his victories, and he's not going to be able to keep Russo down. And if he brings him down in this fight, he's in more danger of losing anyway. So I've got Russo taking this one with a first-round submission and looking impressive in the process.
Yeah, I think this is the easiest fight on the card to call. Russo's a big-time heavyweight prospect. And really, I love the fact that there's three good debuting heavyweights on this card. And there's a handful of other established, pretty decent heavyweights on this card. Really establishing the depth of the division nicely, especially before the Ultimate Fighter fighters even get into the UFC. This is going to be a really deep division by the end of the year, but I think Russo takes this one first round submission. I think this is one it's gonna be pretty academic, about 2 minutes in.
Our final heavyweight debuting fighter, like we just touched on, is Todd Duffy, the 23-year-old American top team prospect. He's taking on Tim Hag, who submitted Pat Barry in his UFC debut earlier this year. The difference in this one is Duffy's a very similar-sized fighter as Haig. Barry was not, and Barry put on a lot of hurt to Tim Haig. Todd Duffy's going to do the same. Haig may get out of the first round. I've got Duffy finishing him off in the second with a TKO. And again, we've got another debuting guy that is going to be a prospect that the UFC is going to be utilizing in the future.
You know, I'd just like to point out here that you are picking all three debuting heavyweights to win. So,
I am doing that.
Buck of a trend there, just so you know. But I agree with you on this one. Duffy's the better prospect. Haig basically got lucky to beat Pat Barry. Pat Barry has no ground game. Haig had a huge size advantage. He won't have either of those advantages in this fight. Duffy's the same size, and he's better everywhere else. Shouldn't be with too much trouble this one first-round TKO for me.
We've got two middleweights with impressive D1 wrestling pedigrees in Nick Catone and Mark Munoz facing off. Munoz dropping down to the middleweight division after a devastating head kick knockout loss to Matt Hamill at UFC 96 in his UFC debut. This is only his seventh fight coming out of Oklahoma State University. He's a two-time All-American there. Nick Catone has over 100 wins in his collegiate career at Rider University, D1 himself. But Munoz is going to be the better striker in this fight. He's going to be the bigger guy dropping down from 205 for the first time. If he can make the weight cut without any issue, I see him having no problem in picking up a second-round TKO over Catone. That's my pick for this one.
Yeah, kind of the opposite, I think, of Jake Rochow, whereas Mark Munoz has made the transition pretty well, has heavy hands, and he isn't afraid to throw them, and knows how to use his wrestling in MMA. So I think the drop down to 185 is a good move. He was pretty soft at 205. He should have the striking advantage in this one. He should be a little bit bigger, and he should be a little bit better of a wrestler. So I think he needs to, just like Aaron Simpson, turn this into a wrestling match, Don't worry about the fans booing. Just get that win under your belt and start working on things from there. I got Munoz taking this one by a decision.
Our final fight on the card is Marcus Aurelio returning to the UFC to take on Evan Dunham. Dunham is an undefeated fighter. Aurelio's had definitely an up-and-down career. When he's on his game and he's good, he is a spectacular fighter to watch with great submission skills. When he's not completely on his game, we've seen him lose a ton of decisions. I think he's going to be coming back into this one on his game. I think Dunham's in for it's just a bad matchup for Dunham against Aurelio. I think it's a very good matchup for Aurelio's return, and I see him taking him out late in the first round with a submission.
Yeah, I'm the same way. This is another one where you can basically flip a coin, and that's what your pick is as to which Marcus Aurelio you're getting. These are generally the kind of fights that he wins, guys that aren't as experienced, aren't as good on the ground. This should be a ground clinic in this one. When he's on his game, he's fun to watch, and I think he's going to be on his game in this one, and I also like him by first-round submission.
Well, we'll be keeping our eyes out on the Gabe Gonzaga-Chris Teixeira fight at Herman Aaron Simpson and Keith Jardine-Tiago Silva for our prediction contest purposes. Place down your bets for this card. How are you spreading out your fake $1,000 on this one?
Well, it's pretty even money on Randy Couture, so I'm putting a full $500 down on Randy Couture. I think he's one of the safest bets on this card. I've got Tiago Silva in a slight upset, so I'm going to put $300 down on him. And like I said, I like your upset call to share, but I can't make the prediction when I've got my belt on the line, but I will throw my last $200 down on the big upset for Teixeira.
I am also throwing $200 on Teixeira because, well, I think it's going to happen. I'm not entirely confident in that pick. I'm very much in agreement on the Couture pick. I think he's definitely a safe bet in this one. I don't think he's going to lose that fight. I'll go $400 on him. I'm going to take another $400 on another pretty even money bet in Chris Lieben. So I've got Couture, Lieben with $400 each, and then Teixeira with $200 on that one.
All right, great minds think alike, apparently.
Well, that is why we are once again battling for your prediction belt that you stole from me at UFC 100. So, Matt, once again, thank you for joining me here, and thanks all for listening for our preview audio. We will have even more audio leading up to the event, and a few days afterward as well with Fallout coverage, including hopefully the return of some of our other columnists for our review show of UFC 102 coming sometime early Sunday. So thank you all again for listening, and thank you, Matt, for joining me once again. For Matt Pelkey, this is Jamie Penick signing off.